Fred Magdoff, welcome to KABU.
Good to be with you.
Fred Magdoff is an emeritus professor of plant and soil science at the University of Vermont. His research was pioneering on ecologically sound ways to improve soil fertility, especially focusing on the critical role of organic matter. He is co-author of a book, Building Soils for Better Crops, Sustainable Soil Management. That was the third edition, was 2010, and it's available on the web, actually, if you want to go to it and read it. Is it completely technical, Fred?
It's written for farmers and students, not written for scientists.
He also wrote another book written for a popular audience with John Bellamy Foster, What Every Environmentalist Needs to Know About Capitalism. That's 2011. You've been very productive recently. He's written a lot on the multiple problems of capitalist agriculture and also the solutions, what you can call ecological agriculture, and the sweeping changes necessary. That's sometimes called ecological civilization. Fred, soils are receiving increasing attention, examining how current dominant farming practices, that is, capitalist agriculture, though the writers often avoid that term, about how current dominant farming methods are depleting soils and contributing to global warming. First, tell us about that, and then we can get to solutions.
Well, you're right, that soils are getting more attention, and that's wonderful. I once gave a talk some years ago, soils as the underappreciated natural resource people sort of didn't think about, because when they thought about natural resources, they thought about forests or water, you know, lakes and streams, etc. And 2015 was declared by, you know, the UN, the Food and Agriculture Organization, as the year of soils, to put emphasis on it. So it is gaining more attention, but there have been many problems. One of the reasons is because of the many problems that agriculture has faced with regard to declining soil, basically declining soil health. Soils have become less healthy, they grow less healthy plants because of the damage, and then you need more pesticides to help the plants, you need more fertilizer to help the plants, you need to irrigate more frequently because the soils don't hold water as well as they used to, and you have sort of a declining spiral.
I read one of your recent pieces arising out of this concentration on soils. The carbon composition of soils and the plants is greatly changing because of all of those factors. And the carbon is not being replaced in soils. It's, in fact, now becoming more greenhouse gases. That is, there's more CO2 emitted. How does that happen?
Well, first off, you got to keep in mind that carbon in soils is organic matter. All of life is based on carbon. The major molecules in our body that carry on life are carbon-based. So the organic matter is old roots and dead microorganisms and other crop residues, etc., that are in the soil. And so the carbon in the soil is the same thing as organic matter. Building up organic matter is one of the ways to build healthy soils or to create healthy soils, because you're feeding the organisms that are in the soil. What you want is a lot of biodiversity in the soil. There's a lot of discussion about biodiversity, you know, in plants and animals above ground, but we want biodiversity in the soil so that you can grow healthy plants. If you don't have a lot of biodiversity, you get more diseases, more problems with nematodes, a little parasite that can be on plant roots feeding from them. So I think there's all sorts of reasons to build up organic matter. It is beneficial for the soil in almost every respect, chemically, physically, and biologically, so that higher organic matter soils are able to grow healthier plants.
And more nutritious foods, I assume.
Well, I expect so, but it certainly will be foods that will not need pesticides to be used on them, and so there'll be that. Whether the mineral content is higher or not, there's some arguments about that, and there's data in both directions on that. It certainly tastes better when they do taste tests. I don't know exactly what that means. But yeah, I think the food will be healthier, certainly, if for no other reason is that that there won't be pesticides on it. What's happened is that with plowing the soils regularly, that is, plowing every year to grow a crop like corn or soybeans, as they do in the Midwest, it stimulates the decomposition of organic matter, especially those with the rich prairie soils where you had deep roots of perennial grasses that helped to build up tremendously good quantities of organic matter. Those soils have lost at least 50% of the carbon that they once had as organic matter, And what that means is it's ended up in the atmosphere as CO2. And it's not just those soils, but that's just an example. In many places around the world, the system of agriculture that's practiced is one which is really exploiting the soil and not regenerating the soil.
In fact, destroying the soil, right? I read about the Palouse. It used to be a huge grain producer in Washington State. And
right.
A lot of it is now, because of the winds and because of the plowing and because of the rain patterns, it's now all rock. The soil is gone.
Yeah, well, they had a major problem there. I visited the Palouse some years back, maybe 15, 20 years, and I happened to be there in the wintertime. One of the problems with soils as the organic matter breaks down is the soil structure isn't as good. You don't form these groups of particles they call aggregates as well. And I went out to some wheat fields, and you could see them sealed at the surface. Basically, all the surface structure was gone. It looked like chocolate icing on a cake or something. You couldn't see any pores. There was no place for the water to go when it rained. And so it just ran off, and it took the soil with it. You know, once you have runoff from a soil, you probably have erosion. And that's what was going on there. So it's bad from two points of view. You're not getting the water stored in the soil, and you're losing your topsoil, which is the best you got because it's high in organic matter.
Is that happening in the prairies because it was so deep? There was so much soil built up over the generations, the eons, the thousands of years across the farm belt of the United States and Kansas, Nebraska. Is that happening there? They're losing soil fairly rapidly, too, particularly like in the Great Depression prior to it, winds that blew the soil to wherever it was blown to.
Well, it came east.
Yeah, it had to come east.
And during the dust.
The people went to California. The soil went east. You know?
That's right, exactly. It even hit Washington very dramatically at one point. Washington, D.C., I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
But I think it has slowed down. There was a tremendous amount of soil loss, and it's still going on. It was once said that for every bushel of corn that they send down the Mississippi, you know, because that's one of the ways they transport corn out of the United States down to the Gulf of Mexico, for every bushel of corn going down the Mississippi, there was 3 bushels of soil that were going down as eroded material. But what's happened is that many farmers in the Midwest, not all, have started to use a practice called no-till, where you don't plow the soil every year. You plant into the old field, basically. You kill the weeds with an herbicide, that's how they do it, and just plant right into it. And they have no-till planters. So that really has reduced erosion. Farmers who do that have reduced erosion substantially, and especially if they're using cover crops. Those are crops that are planted that keep the soil covered in the season when you normally don't have a main crop being present in the field, that helps to reduce erosion as well. So in summary, it was a much worse problem, but it still hasn't gone away. It's still a significant problem in the U.S.
And agriculture as a whole is an enormous component of greenhouse gas, I mean, very large component of the total greenhouse gas emissions. That is from cows and the machines they use and the transport, in addition to, of course, to the loss of carbon from soils.
Yeah, and also the conversion of, like, what's happening in Brazil, the conversion of the Amazon forest to maybe to pasture first and then to soybean fields. Yeah, you will lose a lot of carbon, no question, a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere as the organic matter decomposes.
This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Fred Magdoff. He's a soil expert, has written a great deal on both soils and the depletion of soils from capitalist agriculture. In fact, all bad agriculture practices. Fred Magdoff, a lot can be done. Soils can be regenerated, and we can even grow healthy food without the pesticides and the fertilizers and the rest of the contaminants. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know how to grow food without using pesticides. And the reality is that you can grow just as large crops without pesticides as is done with pesticides. And also, even without fertilizers, if you're using legumes to produce nitrogen, you know, because they have nitrogen-fixing bacteria that live in their roots and nodules in the roots and are careful in recycling and reintegrate animals with the land. What's happened here is that we've segregated the animals out to these animal factory farms where beef and hogs and poultry are raised in confinement, and the feed is brought to them and creates two problems: depletion of fertility in the fields that grow the feed, and then there's all this manure that accumulates by the factory farms that they have to get rid of. So if we reintegrate animals into the cropping system, that's another way to do things better. Using cover crops is another one that I mentioned earlier. Routine use of cover crops is really important, and better rotations. Many times farmers here don't rotate very well. Sometimes they don't even rotate at all. They'll grow the same crop year after year after year. In the Midwest, it's maybe corn and soybeans alternating, but that's not a real rotation. That's they refer to that as crop alternation. That it's not really a rotation of crops. You need to have more complexity in the system, more complexity in the soil, and that's done by organic matter, building up organic matter, and more complexity in your rotation so that you have above ground healthy ecosystem above ground, not just within the soil.
And we have models for doing that. There are lots of farms that are adopting those practices and organizations that are trying to teach them, and organizations like Worldwide Via Campesino that's working with small farmers to adopt those practices.
Yes, absolutely. I was in Brazil 2 years ago in June and visited a settlement of the MST, the Landless Workers Movement, one of their early settlements where they actually have settled people without land on the land. And they're doing a wonderful job growing using ecologically sound methods. They have good mulching on the surface to reduce weeds and to help with the water retention. They're using agroforestry, so they're planting trees, and underneath the trees, they're planting the crops. The trees are far apart. The rows of trees are far apart. And the trees, they can be different species. Some are just used for wood, or they may be legume species so that you can use the leaves and the branches as fertility sources. So, yeah, absolutely. It can be done on a small scale. It can be done on a larger scale. But we do know the practices that add up to ecologically sound agriculture.
You said it can be done on larger scale, but a lot of capitalist agriculture, that is the big industrial agriculture, are they adopting those practices?
They're adopting some. They're not adopting all. I mentioned about no-till, which is a beneficial practice from the point of view of erosion, but still depends on a lot of pesticides. So they're doing something that's good, but I wouldn't call that ecological agriculture or ecologically sound agriculture. Also, they have tremendous amounts of nitrates that leach out of their soils because of this simple rotation that they're using of just corn and soybeans and the tremendous amount of fertilizer that they use on the corn. So the quantities are just unbelievable. I calculated that some million pounds of nitrogen was going down a river called the Raccoon River past Des Moines, Iowa. This is a tributary to the Mississippi. And a million pounds of nitrogen as nitrates just going down the river. It's going to hit the Mississippi. It's going to go down the Mississippi and create that, help to maintain that dead zone, a so-called dead zone at the mouth of the Mississippi and the Gulf. There are a lot of different issues. So I think some farmers are starting to use individual practices that are good, but they're not putting all together the practices that are needed to get to what I would call an ecological agriculture.
This is KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for The Old Mole, talking to Fred Magdoff, who is a soil scientist who writes about farming and capitalist agriculture, as well as capitalism as a system. Fred Magdoff, let's talk about capitalism as a system and dealing with global warming. The questions are not just technical. I mean, you pointed out that there are technical solutions for soil problems and food problems. But that's part of the, seems to me, of a capitalist agriculture and the sort of the consumer society. But there's much more to it, and you've written about it. Tell us about how, in fact, our economic practices and our consumption practices have to change. It's just not a matter of personal behavior. It's a matter of system change. Tell us about that.
Well, I think in capitalist economies or societies, there's two main reasons that the system is anti-ecological, where it actually works to degrade the environment. One reason is that it is an economic system that has to grow. Capitalist society has to grow. It has to produce more stuff next year and get you to buy it, of course, get people to buy it, than it produces this year. If it's not growing, it's in crisis. You know, it's been said that perpetual growth on a finite planet is impossible. It just can't go on forever. But capitalism has no way of stopping growing and doesn't want to, because that's the way more profits are made, is by producing more stuff. And it has to convince you to buy it. So there's a huge sales effort. Maybe $1 trillion of our economy goes in one way or another to try to convince people to buy stuff. And this is all consciously. They understand they got to get rid of it. You know, if they're going to make money, they can't just produce it. They got to sell it. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is that there is no way to take into account during the process that capitalists go through to make decisions about what to produce and where to produce it and how much to produce. There's no way to take into account the environment, because they're looking at profits. That is how they are judged. That's how corporations are judged. That is the motivating force, the moving force. That's what they're after. They're not after producing something for you to use. They're after producing something that they can make money at if they convince you to buy it. So that, to me, those two aspects, that there's an imperative of the system to grow. It has to grow and strives to grow. And individual capitalists strive to grow as well. And countries strive to get their economies growing. And then there's the issue of profits being the determining factor in almost all decisions. And once you have that, that's in the absence of regulations. Now, there can be regulations which force you into saying, well, no, you can't do that here because there's a wetland. Okay, so there are, for example, nowadays in the U.S., there's some provisions about wetlands, but even those are relatively minor as far as their effects, their helpful effects, that is.
And that's all being reversed, actually, now.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's the problem with regulation, is it can be unregulated. And as we're learning, it's happening. It's happening right now.
Fred Magdoff, I don't want to end on that note. What is also happening now is that we are in a period where, as we're losing a lot of battles, we've won a number of big battles over the years. I mean, one of them, of course, is questions of equality for formerly subordinated groups. Of course, that's being furiously opposed, yet still people sort of see that as a goal. But another one, of course, is soils and health and how we live. And people are beginning to sort of recognize in lots of ways that the system as it exists now is not healthy for them, and that we need something else. What else will be is a big question. It seems to me you've contributed to that in your research on soils and your books. Do you have a last word on those sorts of questions?
Well, I think this is a unique time. We have unique opportunities in the United States especially, but also in some other countries. The government seems to be going backwards. Not that the previous governments were all that good, but what's happening now is retrograde and will have serious consequences. On the other hand, I think you're absolutely right. People are willing to talk about capitalism. The word can be used. Some people are starting to see that there are systemic problems, that it's not just an issue of racism, but it's an issue of racism and ecology and the lack of equality in the society, and that these all come together. These are all related, and we've got to solve them together. We can't solve them individually. These are systemic issues. They're caused by the way the system functions. And we need a different system that functions a different way in order to solve these many different problems that people are concerned with. And I think the opportunity that exists now that didn't exist maybe 10 or 15 years ago is that many people are willing to talk about that and consider it. And then we can maybe have a discussion about what comes afterwards. That's what Chris Williams and I tried to do in a new book that we wrote called The Creating an Ecological Society.
Fred Magdoff, thanks for talking to us today.
You're very welcome.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, oh, the farmer is the man that feeds them all. If you'll only look and see, I think you will agree that the farmer is the man that feeds them all. Oh, the farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, lives on credit till the fall. With the interest rate so high, it's a wonder he don't die, and the middleman's the one that gets it all.